This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. I'm your host, Karen Vergara, a senior journalist at Financial Standard. Trump, tariffs and trade wars did nothing to quell the record highs set by the ASX in the 2025 financial year. In fact, volatility seemed to work in many of the company's favour. But what were the fundamentals that drove performance, and are they sustainable? To dissect the latest reporting season, Hamish Tadgell, portfolio manager at SG Hiscock & Company, chats to us about the highs and lows. Hamish, thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here, Karen.
Hamish, let's go through the headline trends of the 2025 reporting season that just passed. What were some of the standouts in your eyes?
I think it's fair to say that this is probably one of the most volatile reporting seasons I can remember in the time that I've been in markets. Just to put some perspective on that, 46% of companies saw price moves greater than 5% and about nearly a third greater than 10%. And that was particularly accentuated in the large caps where we saw price moves often multiples of what we'd usually see. The other trend I'd say is that small caps were the standout. They outperformed the large caps by about nearly 6.5% during reporting season. And we saw that really driven by really strong results in the sort of the resources, consumer discretionary and the REITs area. If I look at the aggregate earnings for 2025, so the year just reported for financial year, they were downgraded by about 2%. So we ended up down 5% for the year in terms of earnings growth. And that's the third year in a row that we've seen earnings falling. So look, I think just in summary, overall, I'd say it was a very mixed sort of reporting season at the head within a stock level, where the market really continues to reward those companies that sort of deliver or with perceived dominant positions, even with low or no growth. And those that really missed were punished severely.
Hamish, what did you see in terms of M&As or buybacks or all those things, all those transactions and dividends paid that occurred throughout the financial year?
Yeah, look, I think a couple of things. I mean, firstly, I think there were clearly much fewer capital raisings than we'd normally see around results and secondary market issues. And I think companies were focused on returning capital to shareholders rather than raising capital. And we saw that through, I think it was total aggregate about $8 billion in buybacks.
Oh, wow.
Plus special dividends. Companies like JB Hi-Fi, Wesfarmers, Qantas, A2 Milk, Supercheap were some of the sort of the standouts in that area. The other thing I'd just say from a macro perspective is that the reporting season really confirmed our view that Australia is much better positioned from a relative perspective than probably a lot of other countries. That is, we're not being as impacted by the geopolitical tariff and sort of economic implications of those directly. Where on the other side, I do think that we saw a discernible weakening in the trading conditions for a lot of the US-focused companies. The likes of the US housing stocks all called out that the market for new home builds and remodeling and work continues to really deteriorate in the US. It's clearly being impacted by sort of the tariff uncertainty. I think also cost of living pressures is weighing on household and business confidence at the moment. And from an interest rate perspective and a macro perspective, is the opposite for a lot of the domestic stocks and particularly the small cap stocks. We know that small cap stocks typically outperform when there's expectations of rate cuts. And we saw that through reporting season quite strongly in a lot of the domestic cyclicals, such as I've talked about already, some of the retail stocks, but also some of the contractors and the like also perform very strongly.
Just quickly, you mentioned the small caps are performing. Was there a specific company or sector that they operated in that particularly shone?
Look, I think discretionary retail in particular was, we know it's leveraged to, as I say, expectations of lower rates. Mm. We also saw the small cap REITs perform very strongly, and particularly the retail REITs, again, on a similar sort of dynamic. And the other area within small caps, which clearly performed pretty well, was the resources. Now, a lot of that's being, I think, was driven in the gold sector, but that was more macro driven around, I think, expectations of US Fed rate cuts and potentially also some concerns that have arisen more recently around Fed independence and the like, which is feeding into risk premium and seeing gold price certainly spike, and that's been feeding in through the performance of a lot of the gold stocks.
Let's delve more quickly into the lower interest rate environment. How does that affect, I guess, for example, Hamish, companies' borrowing capacity and how they, allocate capital and how they want to expand or contract?
Yeah, look, I think one thing we did see through reporting season is that companies probably outside the resources sector are pulling, and energy was the other area, I would say, really lower capex rather than higher capex at this point. And I think that probably reflects a little bit of where we are in the economic cycle. The energy sector was one sector where we saw capex upgrades, and really I think that's on the back probably of a bit of an improvement in the outlook in that sector over the last 6 months post the federal election. There had been quite a bit of concerns around getting approvals for projects, and since the election we have seen a number of approvals granted. We've also seen, I guess, Santos bid, or the bid for Santos, I should say, by XRD. And that, I think, has put the spotlight on the energy sector. I think it's highlighted that some of the assets we've got here are high-quality, scalable-type assets. And it's also put a focus back on the East Coast gas. And we know that there's a shortage of gas demand there, and a number of the companies, Beach Energy, Amplitude, for example, articulated their sort of capex plans for drilling campaigns, etc.
In your analysis, are you including like the transition to renewable energy when you look at these companies as well that are focused on the green transition?
Yeah, not so much in what I was talking about there, but certainly that right. is a theme. It tends to be what we've seen though is probably pull back a little bit on some of the what I would call sustainable projects like hydrogen and wind a little bit. And we've seen a lot of investment or talk of investment into things like transmission, which clearly links into batteries. And the likes of Downer, Gentech, all highlighting, very strong demand for transmission spending and work. The other company I'd call out in that area would be Worley. So Worley's a global consultant player. And it's certainly not seeing any cancellation of projects on the back of sort of Trump and the tariffs and some of the geopolitical uncertainty. It's continuing to see more sustainable work, but also continuing to see a lot of work in the sort of traditional hydrocarbon fossil fuel space. And I think that just reflects that at the end of the day, the transition is going to require a mix of all types of fuels to get there. And gas in particular still remains a really important transition and baseload fuel.
Good explanation, and thanks for clarifying that. A step back a bit, any other observations in terms of how the other sectors may have performed throughout the year?
Yeah, so look, we've talked a bit about consumer discretionary and REITs, and they were clearly very strong. I've also talked a bit about resources, and the gold sector was strong, but we've also seen a bounce back in things like lithium. Not so much in this result season, but clearly lithium prices improved on the announcement of some closures of capacity in China more recently. I guess we need to get a little bit more colour around that. We've also seen a very strong demand for some of the critical minerals, and those stocks like Lynas and so forth have benefited from that. And that's really resolves around geopolitical concerns around being able to access things like the critical minerals, which in the world, China's got 90% of those, and they're becoming countries like the US and ourselves see them as clearly important strategic and sovereign reserves that we need to build up. In terms of a couple of other sectors, data centers, the growth for data centers and sort of data clearly remained a very strong theme. And NextDC had a very strong result, highlighting 42% increase in contracted user utilization year on year. And they announced some further details around the expansion of their plans into Asia. And I think coming back to your point about sort of capital before, Next announced it's going to do some JVs with some institutional partners in order to fund data centers. So clearly the data centers are very capital intensive. And so that's something new for them and it was well received by the market. Just lastly, just in terms of lowlights, so I guess all the sectors that didn't perform so well, healthcare, I think you'd have to say, is the standout in that area. It had a pretty weak reporting season and heavily influenced by the CSL result. So CSL is about 50% of the healthcare index, and its result was disappointing relative to expectations. The headline numbers in themselves were okay for the 25 year, but they're arguably a little bit lower quality than expected on. But more importantly, the company guided to softer guidance in its Behring plasma business, particularly around margins in 26, and really walked away from, I guess, reaching its pre-COVID Behring margin by 2028. And the market didn't take that well. The other thing with CSL is that as part of this, they announced some big strategic changes. So they're going to embark on a big cost out program. They're looking for realign the way that they do R&D and use more sort of third parties. And they announced the demerger of this Aquarius business. So there was a lot in the result for CSL. And I think it's a lot for the market to get its head around. And clearly that would reflect it in the share price. And I think it's going to take a little bit of time for us to, or the market to, they get comfortable with some of those announcements and see some further evidence of particularly the recovery in their core plasma business.
And we cannot not talk about the banks, Hamish, which I know I think most super fund members, including myself, are invested in. What are your thoughts on their performance last financial year?
Good question. I mean, the banks have clearly had a very, very strong year in terms of share price performance led by CBA. Mm-hmm. During reporting season, they performed very strongly. Outside CBA, which the other banks were up about 10%. So what we saw through reporting season was all of the banks provide trading updates or results. Some of them are quarterly like NAB, so you've got to be careful in reading too much into them. But there was firstly a distinct rotation out of CBA and into some of the other banks, like Westpac and NAB in particular, and ANZ also to a lesser degree. The second thing I'd say is the earnings for the banks actually came in slightly better than expected, particularly for NAB and Westpac. And so what we saw is very modest upgrades, but I think the results continue to highlight that the asset quality still remains good, bad debts remain benign, and in that environment, investors are happy to still be in the banks, I guess. And I think what you also saw is quite a bit of rotation out of things like CSL and some of the stocks that disappointed into the banks. So the price moves we saw weren't necessarily reflective of the underlying fundamentals, but rather probably just more liquidity and repositioning. The last thing I'd just say on the banks is that, you know, it's hard to argue that they're great value at the moment. Multiples are reasonably stretched relative to history. We've got pretty flat earnings outlook, and they're really being supported on the basis that the Australian economy and macro still remains relatively supportive. So for us, you know, we're really underweight the banks. We've got a preference for those banks, which I guess where we see potential for a re-rating, and you know, our preferred bank at the moment is actually ANZ. New CEO's gone in there in Nuno Matos. And I think you'll see over the next couple of months, he'll come out with his new strategic plan, which we think will see a much bigger focus on costs and returns, or cost out, I should say, and higher returns. And we see that as an opportunity for re-rating.
Just quickly, it's been about 7 years since the Royal Commission and the banks have exited wealth management. Do you think that was a good move? Well, I know some of them still have parts in like BT Panorama and the wealth management platforms, but they've largely, exited wealth management. Is that a good move, and so that they can solely focus on banking itself?
Yeah, look, I think the banks have de-risked a lot, clearly. Partly that's been a function of needing to hold more capital post the GFC. So they have got out of wealth management, which, to be frank, you know, the returns weren't what they expected when they went in. And the other thing which clearly the banks have done is that they've de-risked in relation to commercial property. And that area is now being funded a lot more by the likes of private equity or private credit. But the banks have certainly reduced their exposure in that regard. And really, you know, if I can put it, shrunk back to a large degree to being, you know, traditional mortgage banks. They've still clearly got an institutional businesses, but it's a smaller part of their business than it used to be.
And finally, Hamish, what are your thoughts on the outlook for this current reporting season for FY 2026?
Good question. I mean, we come out of reporting season and we look forward...
on to the next one.
Exactly. We come out, we look forward the next 12 months and we look at earnings for 2026. They're only about 2% for the market. And we saw sort of modest small downgrades. And the market's trading on, in aggregate sense, about 20 times, or a bit over about 20.3 times. So that's sort of close to a 30% premium to its 10-year average.
Wow.
So I think what I would say is that, you know, if you look at the market in general, growth doesn't look, you know, fantastic. Multiples look sort of elevated. So I guess the question is, you know, how do you make money in that environment? And what I would say is that within the market, it's quite bifurcated. And we've seen that through reporting season. Right, in terms of certain aspects of the market are performing, particularly those where businesses, franchises are becoming, if anything, more dominant. Those companies which I guess are less exposed to some of the geopolitical risks, less exposed to the inflation risks, are better positioned. And a lot of those businesses we've talked about in terms of, you know, domestic retail, some of the industrials locally, the contractors, the banks have done better. On the other side, I think, you know, coming out of reporting season, it's hard to get really bullish around some of the industrial housing stocks, really, because it looks like it's going to get worse before it gets better. That said, you know, we have to have a mind's eye to the fact that both here and in the US, there's expectations of rates cuts. And we know that the market price is a forward-looking, and we know that they'll be priced in, you know, ahead of actually happening. And so I think, though, that that's more of a 26, 27 recovery rather than sort of an early sort of 26 sort of recovery. So in summary, I would say that we are very much focused on stock-specific ideas and the fundamentals. You need to be active in this type of environment. Areas like AI and digital, which we've talked about, energy, critical infrastructure, and critical infrastructure like data centers, like fiber networks, you know, Chorus, for example, which is the New Zealand NBN, and critical services, which you're going to need regardless of really how the economy performs, such as Cleanaway or Cube or Seven Group Holdings through its Coates Hire business and through its Caterpillar business, we still think are very well positioned. And actually coming through reporting season, talked about, you know, that they expect to continue to grow in this environment.
That was a great summary, and hopefully no recessions. Fingers crossed. Hamish, thank you so much for your time. We've learned a lot today.
Good. Well, lovely to be with you, Karen, and thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.